Welcome back to another episode of Dentistry's Growing with Grace podcast. Join Grace and her guest of the week as they discuss lessons learned in the industry and explore unique insights into ethical growth.
Hello and welcome back to Dentistry's Growing with Grace. I am very excited to have my friend Matthew Hernandez here with me today. Matt, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Good to be here with you.
I'm excited because I'm going to talk and you're going to talk about some of the mistakes we're seeing made, especially in the startup space. And before we jump into all of that, tell our audience a little bit about your experience in dentistry and what's led you to this point of being the owner of Seraph Dental Management.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is extremely extensive in dentistry. So my family's been in it for the last three generations. I'm the third generation to continue it on. So my grandfather and my dad, they were denturists, and most folks in the country don't know, like, what the heck is a denturist? I've never even heard of that. So basically what that is a provider that can, you know, you go to school, you're a lab technician, then you have to go to school for another couple of years, and then you pass the test, the state board, and then you can become a denturist, which basically means you can work on the general public, have a denture practice, basically. And then you can see your own patients. You can treat them. You can diagnose. You can restore anything that's missing. Basically, that's what you're doing. So my grandfather and my dad did this. My dad had 28 practices throughout his career. And man, they were all startups from scratch. So, you know, if you can imagine, if you don't know what a denturist is, neither do the banks. So whenever you want to go open up an office, it's completely, you're on your own. It's like, how are you going to do this? You know, so it was total bootstrap. And that's how I learned how to create businesses and how to make mistakes and how to live with those mistakes and overcome them. My dad had practices where he was able to partner with dentists, actual periodontists, prosthodontists, general practitioners, just because his patients specifically wanted, you know, to have all that care done in his location. So in the state of Washington, that's where we were. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to partner with doctors, or you're allowed to bring on an associate. So that's what he did. He brought on associates and he started to build and develop. And that's when I started to learn the business of dentistry in my teens. So I started working with him now, you know, building the practices, learning what PMS systems were, learning what KPI wasn't a thing back then. Heck, we didn't even have internet worth the darn. It was all dial up. And when everything started going into, you know, the thought process of, yeah, we're going to start billing online, you know, and then you got to wait for the dial up to be stationary. And then all of a sudden it just boop, turns off on you, you know, and then like, great, I got to start over again. It took me an hour just to get all these claims in there. It was fun. We came from back in that direction. So my dad had ended up exiting out of dentistry and he sold all of his practices. And then for myself, when I got started, I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. How the heck am I supposed to get going? So I said, all right, I know how to do this. So I'm going to get started. So that's when I basically got moving. I created 35 of my own denturist basically practices, and they were all partnered up with periodontists, prosthodontists, and general practitioners. Some of them had hygienists, started just to develop the clinic in that regards. My uncle has a dental equipment company in Fort Worth, Texas. And he's been at that for 40 years. So he was another, you know, contributing person in my life that educated me on how equipment works. What do you need to do for your vacuum systems, for your air compressors, how far to run the lines and how to, you know, design the whole thing. So when I started doing mine, I didn't have the luxury of just getting a loan. I couldn't do it. So I had to bootstrap it. So I partnered with an individual that I went to the dentistry school with. And then, yeah, I just started growing that practice, started becoming much bigger than it was. And then we went to another one and then another one and another one. And in 26 years, you know, I created 35 practices. It was back in 2018, basically when I had everything all up and running. But as a startup, you learn so much of what works and what doesn't work, what demographics will dictate in terms of what you can offer patients. So I had put them all over and I ended up working my way up from being in the underserved areas to the middle market class where you're mostly PPO, fee for service. And then finally I got all the way up to a fee for service practice. So I've learned over the years what it's like and how challenging it can be getting through those different ranks of serving patients.
That's awesome. I'm a startup too. And when I started, I had no money. I was 24 and that was interesting because I looked 12 and a half. There's still some old videos floating around from me when I first started. They're embarrassing, but might as well leave them up. It's fun.
That's history right there.
Yeah, they're out there somewhere. I look like I'm in somebody's basement or cave somewhere, like, you know, very limited access to light and
right.
Equipment. But it's tough. It's tough to get momentum. It's tough to get started. And I know when I meet with startups, budget is always the toughest thing because you've got no cash flow. And it's always so painful for me to meet people starting up a dental practice, whether it's a general dentist or orthodontic or, you know, pediatric, whatever it may be. And to see all of this money and time and energy and resource go into education and building out the perfect office with the perfect chair, with the ergonomic setup, with all the break rooms and the, and literally everything's been thought about. And it's, that's the fun part. And then it's time to bring in patients and there's no budget. There's no money left. There's nothing. And you know, a lot of people think about hiring someone like you to help them avoid very costly mistakes, but again, there's little to no budget and we're all out of risk. We're all out of the ability to take more risk at this point. And it's just tough. It's tough. So what are some of the top budgeting and timeline mistakes that you see in this startup space?
Well, the biggest one is ego. There's a lot of ego in dentistry and a lot of people don't like talking about it, but it's totally true. Yes.
No.
Yeah, right. That's literally one of the biggest problems. And it's like my dad was a type A alpha dog, totally. I mean, like you didn't, even if he was going the wrong way and there's a massive black pit there, nope, I'm going that way. And that's what he would do. And no matter what, all right, we're going to have to watch him fall into it because that's what's going to happen. He knows better. That's generally what I see. I did the same thing in the beginning too. And it actually led me to losing. So out of 35 practices, I had to close 5 of them. So if you can imagine the heartache that it took, I mean, to get those things and then they didn't work, you know, I put them in the wrong spots and I wasn't really listening. People were like, oh, I don't know. I don't think that's going to work. I'm like, yeah, it'll work. I got it. I can handle it. You know, and that's usually what I continue to hear. It's like, oh yeah, I'll figure it out along the way. Like, okay, the business of dentistry is completely different than the clinical practice of dentistry. They're two separate elements. And if you can imagine, you're going to school. Like for me, I went to dentura school. It's not that long technically, but I went to 2 of them. So I went to dentura school for 6 years on top of being a laboratory technician. So, I mean, I should have been a DDS. That would have been easier. You know?
Way easier. What were you thinking?
Right. No, exactly. Well, yeah, following the family lineage. I just got the yes, sir kind of thing and I kept marching. So, you know, but that was the issue. It's like when I got out and I was working with my dad, he had it under control, but he did and he didn't. You know, think of it that way. Times change, people change. The dynamics of business, it still remains. There's still basic principles, but the biggest issue is it's just people have that mindset of, yeah, it's not that hard. I can Google it. I can go do some seminars. I can research it, you know, and I keep telling people, it's like, why would you do that when you have industry leaders out there that have made all these mistakes? You can bring them on for the same cost as a surgical tech, or even at the very most, if you're growing, the cost of an OM or maybe an assistant. I mean, you're not even looking at that big of an investment and you're going to save, oh God, in stress and time and failures. And it just getting access to that knowledge of, okay, this worked, you know, I understand how this is going to work, giving you that checklist, you know, that you just don't know yet. So it's that total ego is one of the biggest factors of making people make these mistakes. Now in terms of,
let's talk about that though. Okay. Because that's not a popular thing to say, especially because I have this rule that I've learned along the way, which is never insult your audience, right? Well, here we are saying, listen, don't be egotistical. But saying, hey, we've been there and we've both been through this where, yes, we kind of see, I don't know. I've always felt like, especially at the beginning of my business ownership, I would turn to books. I read a ton of business books. I've read Traction 8 times. I practically have it memorized. I don't think I know the answers. I look to people who have done it, take their feedback, and then, but I am also kind of stubborn, like trial and error. Like I'll try it. And then if it doesn't work, I'll either try it again or try something else. I'm okay with risk. I'm okay with risk. So that balances my ego problems. But let's talk about some phrases or some indications that someone might have a problem with their ego, because I don't think anyone walks around thinking, oh, my big fat ego is in the way of my decision making. I don't think that we're that self-aware. I don't know.
Yeah, no, right. No, it's behaviors really. And it was the same with my dad. Like my dad would never say that stuff. And it was the same with me. It rubbed off on me in the beginning because I just felt like I was a hotshot. Yeah, I got it. You know, I could put up another one. This is making, you know, it's 800,000. Okay, I'll get another one. No big deal. So it's literally your behavior. And it's that swagger that you start to pick up. Just because you did it right once doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get it right again. And that's what I had to learn because I've gone to different demographics. I mean, you could go 10 blocks down the street and you're serving a different group of people. So that same hotshot thought process that, I mean, you might've just got lucky, you know, getting the right team members, because that's another dilemma. You know, again, the business of dentistry is operated by your auxiliary team, your front offices, your assistants. I mean, it's a different process. So if you don't have them duplicated, which we don't have a duplication machine yet in this world, you're going to have to be running by the string of your teeth basically to see if it's going to work out. So I think it's just behaviors, you know, of what we assume if we're going to start taking unnecessary risks or have those phrases of, yeah, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And we'll see how it goes. That's all basically means you don't have a clue.
No idea.
But you're going to.
I'm always looking for those phrases. I tell right. my, if someone starts a sentence with, I think, I don't listen right. to anything after that. Nothing counts. Go seriously. Verify, bring the right information back. I'm going to guess, I'm going to assume, I think we have about X amount of new patients per month. You have no idea. Let's run a report, you know?
Right. Yeah.
One thing you said that's just sticking with me is that I've done this once so I can do it again. And that is so painful for me because in these Facebook groups, I see these influencers and thought leaders, and it's great to put your information out there. But just because you've done it once, it doesn't make you the expert. It does not. And the reason why that's so important is because in dentistry, there's a large focus on peers. What did my peers do and how did it work? And I know that guy, so I trust him because I went to dental school with him. Now he's in a different market than me, different level of competition, totally different brand and service offerings. But he did XYZ to market, so that's going to work for me, and I trust him. There's a lot of different variables in there. And when I show up to a marketing planning session, I'm like, I've done this not once, not twice, but 7,000 times. Don't you want that collective experience in your planning? Versus my buddy did it this way. That's dangerous.
Right. Totally. Yep. It doesn't make any sense though. But again, there goes your ego. It's like, oh yeah, he did it. We're cut from the same cloth. So I can do it too.
I mean, and how would you know, unless you were listening to this podcast right now, how would you know that that's not the right way to go about it? Because your friend in a totally different type of market with a different kind of budget, maybe that's his hometown, so he knows everybody there, and you're relocating. Like one tiny change in the dynamics, and it doesn't work the same.
Totally.
You even have to consider your personality type when you're considering what strategies you're going to implement.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because that's the other biggest issue. It's like, you can't buy a personality, and what you got is what you got. I mean, especially once you've gotten in your 40s, you know, 30s and 40s, that's who you are. And if you think that's going to work in a lower end demographic or a high end demographic, like literally once you've been working in one demographic with those types of patients, you go to something else, you're just a fish out of water again. It's like hitting the reset button. You got to relearn how to work with them, how to treatment plan, and how to get them through the process and get them to accept care and then be successful at that level. That's the reality that most people don't know because they haven't done it yet. You know, that's the key.
Yep. So one of the biggest issues I see is they are finally opening the doors and there's no money left for marketing whatsoever. So Grace, give me ideas. What can we do for free, cheap, now, yesterday? And let's get 100 new patients on the waiting list.
Right.
My Wix website, you know, I mean, it's just, the mistakes are just, they're plentiful. What are some of the budgeting or timeline mistakes that you see? I know I harp on this marketing thing, but outside of marketing, or within it, what do you see as an issue with budgeting and timeline?
Usually there is no budget. That's the issue. you know how many folks that I've talked to? I mean, even me, when I got started, it's like, I don't really know. All I know is I need to buy the equipment and I'll figure it out along the way. It's like, how much do you need to me? I was like, all I know, I had something to eat and I'm got a place to sleep. I didn't care. I'm marching that way. I'll do whatever I got to do to make that sacrifice and keep marching. With a lot of folks though, it's kind of similar, not as severe, but it's similar in the sense that, like, okay, what do you guys have working with? How much do you have left? All they're doing is looking at the bank account and they're going, oh no, it's getting lower. It's getting lower. I've only got so much left, or I'm almost out. Like, okay, how did you get there? You know, did you realize that you have to do specific things in the beginning? And the one thing that they're not doing is not focusing on the marketing element. They're not focusing on how the processes are going to work. And they're not focusing on the culture. They're not focusing on none of this stuff. They're just more worried about, oh my God, I got to get to the permitting. I got to get the contractor in there. Can I find one? And how pretty is it going to look? And did I get the right equipment? Like, that's really not the premise of what you should be focusing your time on.
The pretty thing, how pretty is it going to look? I see these beautiful office build outs and I see the priority being in the office space. And I think that's great if you have the means, but in lieu of marketing, oh, you're not going to have anyone to sit in that beautiful chair.
Right. Well, and even convert, because they have to have the skill set and the verbal skills to be able to take. I mean, you could put $1 billion into marketing. Whoever's answering that phone is going to dictate the outcome of what you're going to get out of that marketing budget. So you, like, for example, you guys are doing your thing. You know, you get to answer that phone. Hello, how can I help you? I'm like, who wants to schedule with hello? You know, I've heard that so many times, but they're on their phone and people are walking in. I was like, oh my God, just give, you know, there's no service.
The worst one I heard, and it was one of my clients too. Oh, it's painful. I called and it was dental office. And I was like, oh no. Some marketing too, it requires sales skills. Your team needs sales skills. I'm sorry, call it what you want. Verbal,
whatever. Hospitality.
It is how the person feels when they come in contact with your brand, with your people, with your practice. It all has to align.
Crazy? I got to throw one out there right quick, because I have an example. I was doing a competitor analysis, calling around for other practices to figure out, like, hey, how much are these other folks charging? So I would call random offices and, you know, hey, I'm a patient. I need to get in and, you know, can you help me? I got a tooth problem, you know, and then I had, out of the entire country of all these doctors and practices I was calling, I had two out of hundreds that I called. Two of them made me really want to go get something. Like, I really wish I had this dental pain, because of the level of compassion that came through that phone. And I preach this so much, because it's your tone of voice, the sincerity, that passion in that person's heart to serve and take care of one another, made me go, dang, I don't really care what you guys are charging, but you made me feel like you were going to take good care of me when I came in there. I could get in there, get the symptomatic tooth taken care of, and then I was going to get out that door. And I mean, I didn't really, but that was the thing. It's like, it was that those verbal skills, and it was that person's compassion and that desire to serve her fellow human being that made me feel like that's how you do it. You know, if you got marketing and you got that type of a mindset and capable in person up front answering those phones, talk about conversion, you know. That's what they're looking for.
I always say that sales is a transfer of emotion, and I didn't make that up, obviously. I just repeat what other smart people have said already. And that matters in everything you do, and it has to be sincere. Sometimes you need to hit the reset button and remind your team why we're here, why we're doing what we do. Timeline wise, I think this came up with us yesterday when you and I were chatting, because we chat a lot about, like, mutual clients and what they need and where they're at. And we talked a little bit about hiring the team. And for a startup practice, how do you balance the timeline of hiring people when you don't have any cash flow yet? That's always, I've had people say, we have nothing left for marketing, but we have, our team is here. And I'm like, how are you paying that?
Right.
How does that work? I don't know.
Yeah. So it's man, for me, it was always skeleton crew. It's you got to be lean and mean in the beginning, because you just don't have anything. I mean, you just don't. I don't care if you have the Yankees of you know, dental auxiliaries. I don't, you can't afford them. And if you cannot afford them, what's going to happen after you break through your working capital if you were blessed enough to have it? I never did. So for me, it was like, okay, I got to get in there and put on 30 hats today because I got to make this fly. And I would do what I needed to do to get to that point, which is what I always tell individuals. Like when you do a startup, you've got to be humble enough to understand that you've got to wear many hats. You've got to get in there. You've got to get after it. This isn't one of those things where you're just going to be able to sit there and delegate, do some drill and fill, and your office is going to work just miraculously perfect. You know, it doesn't work that way. So you cannot hire an entire team before you open, you know, and I don't care what you're giving them to do. It's just not enough. And you certainly aren't going to be able to pay them full prices if you are a fully functional practice. So that's one big mistake that I see a lot of folks doing. They start going bananas trying to get them because we all know how hard it is to attract team members, you know, to try to find those auxiliaries.
Where do you start? Let's say you're a general practice. You're in a moderate competition market. You just started marketing, but it takes a few months to work. Listen, people, it takes a few months to work. If you start day one, you're not going to have patients day two.
Anyway, seriously.
I digress. So what do you tell someone in that situation? You know, how many people should they hire? Should they have a hybrid assistant front office phone support and then graduate? Or, I mean, what's like the skeleton crew look like when you're opening the doors and you have no patients?
Yeah. Okay. So some people do that. I'm always against having the hybrid front office dental assistant kind of split. I mean, you can do that type of a deal, but talk about creating burnout because they're going to be burning rubber in the front and the back. And they can do it. Yes. And they care and they want that job. But what you're doing to that human being is not right. You know, you need to simplify the processes, especially with the generational, you know, gap that we've got. You know, the greatest generation versus Gen Zs and Gen Y and Gen Xers, you know, they're not like the greatest generation. You can't just give them an order and they'll say, yes, sir, and go do it. You know, so the idea is to simplify their processes and make it simple so they want to stay there. They don't feel like they're overwhelmed. They feel like they can do it and they can make you proud. That's the biggest key. But to skeletonize it, basically, you need somebody in the front, somebody with verbal skills, somebody with that hospitality, that compassion. That's literally my, you know, go-to. I don't really care about dental backgrounds. Like I can train that, but I can't train a personality. So if they have that personality, perfect. You got that front office. You need a DA, obviously. You need somebody in the back that can do what you know, clean up, set up, get ready to go for the next one. So it's usually those three people. You know, you don't need an OM, by the way. Goodness, I've seen that happen too. That's another massive mistake because you don't know what you don't know. So people tend to go directly to find an office manager. And office managers generally, I've got mixed emotions on that one because they get paid quite a bit. And I'm all for that when you got a functioning practice, but you don't need an OM right out the gate in the beginning.
You know what I'm loving? Okay, I just want to say this. I am meeting so many people where wife is dentist and husband joins in to be business manager and starts part-time and then they kind of grow together and I'm loving and or vice versa, husband doctor, wife, you know, office business manager. It can be a great thing and it can be a horrible thing. Great. It's great when you have total buy-in, you have equal work ethics, and you delineate, this is what I'm in charge of. This is what you're in charge of.
Right.
I work with my husband. You can tell I have this firsthand experience.
Sure.
It's good when you can do it, but it's bad when, again, we're going to say the E word, when ego gets in the way, because I've seen husband managers or wife managers who are fielding new patient calls and they have no training in that. And so then they're invested. That's the automatic benefit of spouse in business is they're hopefully not going to steal from the company or have any, you know, there's inherent trust there that they've bought in because it's theirs. Sure. But then you have the ability to coach, you go to coach them and they're uncoachable. That's the hard part. That's the problem with anyone. If you go into a situation and you're uncoachable, you're anti-learning, then you're not going to be successful in that role, no matter who you are.
Exactly. And that kind of goes back to budgeting. So like, you need to have that in there. You got to find you that coach, that practice, you know, transition expert, somebody in the industry that knows what you're going through, because it's, again, it's variable. And there's really no one person that's the one that walks on water. It's like, even me, I've got all this experience. I've risen to the occasion. I've made it and I failed and I made it and I failed. I've done it so many times. I've had laboratories. I had a mobile dental practice across the state of Washington where we serve, you know, I think 35 health and rehab facility. I mean, I've done so much, but am I perfect? No, it takes perspective. It's the individuals that you're looking for that may give you what you need in the beginning, but you have to budget this stuff. You know, these are more primary. Marketing's primary, leadership is primary, you know, before you go get that fancy 8 AC 12 o'clock position, you know, spending $30,000 for a center island cabinet. Do you really need that? I mean, I never had it. I've had some serious hole in the wall offices that I eventually grew up and renovated. It looked really pretty, but those offices were generating quite a bit, you know, and it didn't, you don't need that much. But again, that goes back to ego. Some of these folks want to have the Taj Mahal of a dental practice, and then you're stuck with all that debt. And before you know it, stress happens. Before you know it, your schedule's out of whack and you're pushing people. And then all of a sudden, boom, burnout hits. People are running around. I don't know why I can't have, you know, my employees stay with me. It's like, I wonder why, you know, that's where this whole thing just spirals out of control. So,
yeah. And I'm going to say in response to that, I think just as so many people struggle to keep employees, an right. equal number struggle equally in letting go of wrong fit employees. And I yes. would even argue that's a bigger problem in dentistry is I've had my yeah. team for 10 years, 20 years. They've been with me from the beginning and like they're stealing from you or
yes.
you know, they don't show up half the time.
Right.
So there's this thing called culture. And I think a lot of people think it has to do with how much paid time off you get and
right.
what kind of, I don't know, in the marketing world, it's like, do you have ping pong and kegs and this right. weird stuff, which it's all a trick anyways, but not real culture. But
right.
I've learned that culture is the energy of your practice. Culture is the personality of your collective team. And sure. if you have one person who's really not a fit, you can't protect your culture. You can't protect that positive energy within your business. Have totally. You seen this as like a major way? Are you seeing this in dental practices? I'm not that embedded in it.
Yeah, no, I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it so many times. I mean, I saw it with my family. I kind of did it a little bit myself. And then when I've been coaching, you know, all these practices across the country, yeah, it's that way. I mean, and the funny thing is, I almost relate it to a relationship, a physical man-woman relationship, because people tend to like, you fall in love. Yeah, they're wonderful. And then they start making excuses for the individual. And I'm dealing with that constantly. You know, it's like, oh yeah, well, so-and-so does this, but you know, they're terrible. They're angry and they're not really doing what I asked them to do. And they kind of get mad at me, but you know, we work well together. I'm like, come on, this is like a horrible, you know, this is like Couples Retreat, the movie, you know, we work well together kind of thing. Like, seriously, you can't be making excuses for something that is a business. You know, this isn't a relationship. You're not married. You know, this is a purely business. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this is why you need an advisor. I'm just going to say it because sure. when you're in it, sometimes just having a trusted person to speak to allows mm-hmm. you to get that perspective.
Right. And
allows you to know, okay, these are the priority. These are the next things we need mm-hmm. to do. So when it comes to leadership, and this will be my last question. What support do dentists need?
They need somebody that they can trust. That's one of my biggest pet peeves because none of us really have that full on, yeah, 100% trust. But ideally, that's what you're looking for. And it's very hard to find that trust in your local market. It is. I mean, I couldn't find it. Every time I opened up an office, that's one of the reasons why I exited out of my whole thought process of, you know, with those practices, because it was just one after another, and you think you can trust them and you can't. Or that you train them up, you spend $10,000-$20,000 a year on CE or a continuing education for these folks. And then all of a sudden, well, I got to go. I'm going to go move cross country. And now all of a sudden you're left with nothing. So you need leadership that you can trust, that can guide you, that can direct you, that doesn't have a vested interest, let's just say, which is, again, why I do what I do, because it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can still coach your team, which I'm in the United States, by the way, I'm in Texas. So that's kind of what I pride myself in, is that I'm here. it doesn't, I'm not going anywhere. I don't really, I continue education myself, you know, by working with so many teams and practices. So I'm learning constantly. I'll never stop learning, by the way. So you need that talent that you can trust and that can guide you and direct you consistently, perpetually, until you accomplish freedom in private practice. And I'm always for private practices. I love the idea, but you know, when you're doing it alone, it's almost impossible. I mean, you can do it, but this is why burnout exists. This is why, you know, there's so many negatives associated with being in private practice and why folks are jumping on the DSO bandwagon for as long as you can. You know, not many folks will last that long in that thought process either. So then people are just sitting there, you know, day one going, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't like the DSO and private practice is too tough. So what do I do? Hello, I'm right here, you know. We can talk. I will coach you. I'll get you to where you want to be. And there's other people out there, some amazing coaches out there, some great companies that can get you to where you need to get. But you need to understand that it is important and it is a great, it's a worthwhile investment, you know, because yeah. You're going to have that person there with you. If I would have had that with me, it's like my dad did what he did and he worked with me for a little while. And after that, I was kind of sitting there with crickets, you know, making mistakes and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. But you kind of, what more type A people do is you kind of narrow focus down and you're just like, okay, I'm just going to work a lot harder and I'm going to make this work. You don't even think to look outside the bubble that you're stuck in, that little tunnel, you know, that's where
I can so relate to that. I feel like I've reached so many milestones just with brute force. Honestly.
Right. Yeah.
I can relate. I can relate. I do. And I do want to say, you know, you mentioned trust and I want to talk about how I work to establish trust with people and how I know you work to establish trust with people and how that's the forefront of what we do. Mm-hmm. I think at the core of that, for me anyways, is not mandating like an annual contract or a long-term commitment. For me, that's the biggest red flag in a lot of businesses. Sure, you need to commit to the process. You need to have realistic expectations. But if an advisor or anybody is offering you something and you have to like sign in blood, you know, a year, 4 months, right. 4 months, whatever it is, it's probably not what they say. And if they do lean on trust so much, they shouldn't necessarily need that. Right. And so I would just say, everyone's going to say, I'm trustworthy, I'm ethical, but are they giving you truth or are they pitching you some too good to be true by now type? Follow your gut a little bit in these decisions and talk to people, reach out, look at people's reputations. Matthew, I know with you that you're flexible with people when they come on to work with you. It's more about what they need in that moment than do you fit this, you know, program or binder or, and I know you have programs and processes, but I know that it's an individual situation. Mm-hmm. How do you help people feel comfortable, build that trust, you know, in your own working environment?
Yeah. So, you know, initially I always try to give them that free consultation, but, you know, we talk to each other, we figure out what's going on. If it's an hour or two, I've gone 2 hours before. For me, this is my passion. This is something I'll never stop doing. I love it so much. And knowing that I can help change people's lives and your patients is something I'm just totally addicted to. I love it. It's my calling in life. I usually just start out with the free consultation. We talk, we explore the options of what you're doing, how I can help you. I give you some free advice of what I've done. And then that gives you that opportunity to see, okay, where is he coming from? You know, and is he a fit for me? Is it going to work? You know, even listening to this person versus just reading a book or something, because everybody's got a lot of great verbiage to say, but it's ultimately boiling down to you as an individual. And with what I do, I'm right there with you. You know, so that's where the next step comes onto play. So they can talk about, you know, joining on a program or being with me. And it's always month to month because I'm not trying to, you know, lock you into something that you're not going to want. But longevity is king. You know, the longer you stay with an individual, is provided you're learning and it's benefiting you, the more results you're going to get. And you're going to start adapting and evolving into that thought process and mindset. And you don't have to be the one that's doing it. You know, it's just like marketing. If you gave somebody marketing advice, and you just do this on a monthly basis without you actually doing it, how successful is that going to work? It's like, you are the one that they're paying for. You're the one that they want, backing them up, giving them the information and focusing on that task. So it's the same thing with coaching. You know, we work with me, we do what we need to do on a monthly basis. And then, you know, we start to grow from there. And if it goes into something bigger, then even better, but it just take your time, go slow. You know, there's no initial, you know, immediate commitments.
That's awesome. And I think that some people might be on the fence of saying, is this worth it? Should I start this business? I haven't found one that's a fit for me to buy. I'm on the fence. What can I expect? I think having the right advisor is going to play a role in whether or not they even feel the confidence to take that plunge and enter this world of business ownership, which I will say, I love it. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people complain, but it's the most exciting, fun challenge. And you're always learning, you're always growing. And if you're like that and you've hit a ceiling in your career and you're like, what can I do next? Maybe it's ownership. And maybe you should set up a meeting with Matthew. Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for being here with me today. And to our audience, thanks for joining Dentistry's Growing with Grace. We look forward to having more great information for you on our YouTube channel and on our podcast. So make sure you follow along and click the like button. And I hope you have a great day. Thank you very much.
Bye.